Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burdick, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, February 13th. Yesterday was a full moon. Tomorrow is Valentine's Day. This should be interesting. What's also interesting is how the new administration is kneecapping our public health system in the U.S. and around the world. Thanks again to the 77 million people who voted for this clown show. This is no clown show. It's the Foresight Health Roundup podcast. We're going to talk about a new survey of consumer public health priorities and how we can best achieve them with Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How you two doing this morning? Dave?
Well, yesterday was also Abraham Lincoln's 216th birthday. If anyone deserves neon lights on Mount Rushmore, it's Lincoln. I've got his bust on my desk, and I often take solace from his wisdom and his words. So with malice toward none and charity for all, let's proceed with this podcast.
He's our greatest president. Thanks, Dave. Julie, how are you?
Gosh, much less historical. I'm in honestly gorgeous sunny Florida at Judy's house. That's the 86-year-old mom working here for the week, and I can't complain, honestly.
No snow blower for you, huh?
No snow blower for me.
Thanks, Julie. Okay, before we talk about the public health priorities of consumers, let's talk about pennies. As you know, the new administration says it's going to stop minting our current 115-year-old one-cent piece to save money. Dave, you're a reformed banker. How will this affect consumer savings?
No more penny jars, I guess, huh, Dave? When I was a kid, my favorite penny were the Indian head pennies. There was some brand of detergent that was giving away free Indian head pennies when you bought it, and I just forced my mother to buy it so I could get Indian head pennies. But to answer your question, I don't think it's going to have any effect on consumer savings. We're quickly moving to a cashless society. So goodbye, pennies. We're sad, but not surprised to see you go.
Got it. Julie, you're a marketplace expert. How will this affect consumer prices? Will everything go up 4 cents or down 4 cents to end in a five? So we need more nickels.
Yeah, this has been going on forever, this debate for, you know, both Dems and Republicans. And I'm with Dave. I think it's going to have limited impact on consumers. Of course, it's America. We're going to round up to the nearest five. Well, it's more expensive to create nickels. You know, pennies just are they're expensive to create because they're lost in the system. They aren't used. And then the mint needs to make more. So I think this is good. And, you know, Canada went through this and it was smooth. So if Canada can do it, we could do it.
Well, I'm on the opposite side of the fence here. I'm not a banker and I'm not a market expert, but I am a sentimentalist. It's a uniquely American coin with the image of our greatest president on it. I probably have hundreds, if not thousands of them around the house and, you know, in our cars. And like you said, Dave, in a few jars. So I'm going to keep them in the hope that the new administration comes to its senses.
You're the problem, Dave.
You are the problem.
I hear that a lot. That's surprising. So, okay, what we're seeing from the new administration in terms of public health doesn't make sense when compared with what consumers want from our public health system. What consumers want is captured in a new report from the Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University. Rollins released the report on February 4th. It's based on a survey of about 2,100 U.S. adults taken in December. So that's about a month before the new administration came into power. I'm going to share some of the top line findings with you, and you're going to give me your reaction. Here goes. Improving healthcare access and affordability was the overall top public health priority cited by consumers. Ensuring safe water and food was second. Reducing chronic diseases was third. The three lowest priorities were reducing loneliness and social isolation, addressing the health effects of climate change and extreme weather events, and improving health in rural communities. The survey also asked consumers who was in the best position to deal with these issues, the federal government or state governments. The top three issues best addressed by the feds were preparing for emerging infectious diseases and possible future pandemics, addressing the health effects of climate change and extreme weather events, and strengthening safety net programs like Medicare, Medicaid, and free health clinics. I think 2,121 U.S. adult consumers are in for a big surprise. But it's not about what I think, it's about what you think. Dave, in one or two words, what's your overall reaction to the poll results? Where's the biggest disconnect with the new administration? And what policy suggestions do you have to repair that disconnect?
Well, in one or two words, I think the public is smart. My biggest takeaway is the extent to which the survey respondents can join healthcare and public health policy issues under the topic heading of how do we have a healthier country, right? The top three were access and affordability. 52% of people said that, followed by safe water and food, 37%. And then the last was addressing chronic disease, which of course emerges from inadequate public health. That was 32%. So the American public has this right. Public and population health go together like love and marriage. We can't have healthy communities without investments to make them healthier themselves and practices to make them safer. So way to go, American public. The biggest disconnect between the early Trump administration days and sort of that goal of having healthier individuals and communities in the country. Elon Musk and Doge is moving very fast and breaking things. My biggest concerns are budget cuts aimed at Medicaid and childhood nutrition programs. If we're going to try to get ourselves healthier, those are the last places you want to cut. RFK Jr. is on the cusp of being confirmed as HHS secretary this week. I went back and looked at his suspension speech when he endorsed President Trump last summer, and he had a couple of quotes that I found very powerful. He said, "Ultimately, the only thing that will save our country and our children is if we choose to love our kids more than we hate each other." And then secondly, "Instead of vitriol and polarization, I will appeal to the values that unite us, the goals that we could achieve if only we weren't at each other's throats. The most unifying theme for all Americans is that we love our children. If we unite around that issue now, we can finally give them the protection, the health, and the future they deserve." I worry that RFK Jr. is way over his head as he takes on this post, and he's certainly exceptionally misguided on vaccines. But he's absolutely right that improving the health of the American people, particularly our children, has to be the top priority. So let's see what he does. On policy prescriptions, the last part of your question, Dave, the issue in America isn't how much we spend on healthcare, it's how we choose to spend it. There's more than enough money already in the system to provide great health and healthcare services to everyone in the country. We just have to spend it more wisely. So I'm okay with shaking things up if the result is more investment in pro-health activities so we can spend less on healthcare. We need to teach Americans how to swim, not just rescue them when they're drowning.
Yep, couldn't agree more. Thanks, Dave. Julie, any questions for Dave?
Well, Dave, you and I think a lot alike here, but you'll have to wait for that. So I was intrigued by the results of respondents force ranking the most trusted sources of information among three things: healthcare providers, scientific research, and the CDC. I wasn't surprised that education level directly correlates with trust in science, so we'll leave that to the aside. But I was struck by the difference between young adult and the 65 and older crowd. Young adults were more likely to rank scientific research first, followed by healthcare providers and CDC. 65 and older crowd ranked healthcare providers first, followed by CDC and scientific research. Not surprising, but what's your take?
God, you know, I just talked about the wisdom of the American people and how they see population health and public health as part of the same bucket of challenges. Your question reminds me of Winston Churchill's two quotes about democracy. The first is the one everybody's heard, which is, "Democracy is the worst form of government except for every other one." The one that isn't heard as much but applies here is the best argument against democracy is 5 minutes with the average voter. I mean, the truth is, when you dig into these survey results, nobody trusts anybody. Doctors and nurses get 54%, science gets 42%, CDC gets 37%. Not exactly a ringing endorsement. What really surprised me is how much more trust younger people have in social media research than older people. I think it was like 5 or 6 times as much, arguably small numbers or small percentages. But I also saw in that Edelman study I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that people are more confident in their own research than they ever have been before, even while they distrust the primary public sources. It's the Dunning-Kroger effect, where people are supremely confident despite limited knowledge and experience. So I'm perplexed, Julie, but, you know, I started with Lincoln. Maybe I'll end with Lincoln. You know, that great quote of his, you can fool all of the people some of the time. You can fool some of the people all of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time. So maybe I'll take a little solace in that.
Yeah, I guess that's why I never became president, because I would just say people are stupid. So it doesn't have the same ring to it.
It doesn't. You know what? That's what's happening. So what's different?
Julie, tell me your reaction to the poll results in 1 or 2 words. What's the biggest disconnect between what consumers want and what the new administration is doing? And what can the market do to fill the gap?
Well, my 2 words are child unfriendly.
Good.
So I think Dave and I are on a similar page here. 2 of the lower of the 8 top priorities were preventing childhood deaths from gun violence and reducing childhood hunger. There was clearly some age bias going on here and some NRA bias, perhaps. And I was also surprised that loneliness ranked so low in this poll. And I guess it's maybe not as, you know, widely understood a concept, and I worry that it's interpreted as an old person issue, but it's not being recognized as a major population-wide issue on the rise, given technology and workplace shifts and everything we've been through in the last 5 years. And I think this affects children, young adults, you know, people our age, the 65 and older. So that was really surprising to me, honestly. So biggest disconnects, you know, I'm with Dave. The Medicaid cuts are massive when you think about healthcare access and affordability. I know that that's not everyone's definition of access, because some people can't get, you know, with commercial insurance, can't get appointments for 6 months today. But that's massive. And community health centers around this country rely on federal and grant funding. And so many of these programs are being frozen or shut down. And it's actually impacting, you know, small or medium or large parts of community health center budgets, depending upon, you know, the various funding streams that they have. So this is really messing with communities in a big way. And I don't think people understand some of those complexities, you know, that Musk is creating. You know, access to health guidance and resources on federal websites is currently down. So how are people supposed to access information? We're restricting scientific publishing. We're looking at research funding caps. And, you know, I kind of see this funding cap issue on the research side, but it could really hinder like critical public health research and affect a lot of advancements in healthcare that have really been, you know, curative or close to curative in the last decade. So I think that's it's a little dangerous. You know, like Dave, RFK is going to come in and solve the safe food and water issue. So I'm feeling pretty comfortable there. And you know, in reducing chronic disease, again, like everything that's being frozen or shut down, there's so many interlinked issues. And the biggest disconnect is that, you know, Trump is pushing everything to the states. It's not just, you know, abortion and, you know, women's decisions over their bodies. It's a lot of, you know, state enablement. And Americans actually really do see value in the feds managing something. So we are definitely not on the same page there. And I guess to answer your market question, Dave, the market's providing healthcare solutions to those who can pay, those who have commercial insurance, and to, you know, mostly Medicare. And private solutions are growing like grass through the cracks of our public services, but they can't serve those who need them the most without federal support and reimbursement. So Okay, ACA is enabling individual insurance. If you can afford it, there's a mechanism for you to be covered. Great. Hims and Hers and Noom and all these other consumer companies, you know, are offering a different way to access healthcare for certain things. So if you can pay for it, or if your insurance, maybe your commercial insurance covers it, okay, that's new and exciting. Telehealth could solve so much of this access problem, right? And we could actually really start getting into self-care to solve the rural health issues and frankly, to solve a lot of the issues that commercially insured patients are experiencing with health systems. If they would just optimize their staff better, we could solve a lot. So I look at it through that lens. There's so much more in drug development around this research and, you know, AI having access to data to actually really help accelerate drug development. So there's a lot the private sector can do, but it needs a public partner to do most of what it's doing in both, you know, access, affordability, as well as chronic disease. And I will just give one little tip. On the market solution front for ensuring safe food and water, I'm sure people have seen all sorts of apps like this, but I use the Yuka app, Y-U-K-A. And if you saw me at Sephora or at Whole Foods or at Safeway, you'd see me taking the picture of the code and trying to figure out like how it ranks in terms of health and safety. So we can do a lot on our own.
Wow. You are a great healthcare consumer.
I do my best.
Well done. Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
Well, I can just say, you know, channeling my inner Lincoln, you can't fool Julie any of the time. So
exactly.
That was fantastic.
All right. There's one person.
That was
all right.
Fantastic.
Excellent. It's a start.
Well, I was perplexed by the fact that the respondents said states were better positioned by a wide margin to address reducing loneliness and social isolation, as well as improving health in rural communities. What's up with that? Is there any basis for that conclusion at all?
Well, okay, it seems logical to me that two things are happening there. People see the role of community in those issues, and they recognize that the federal government doesn't really understand a lot of what happens in rural America, or, you know, the nuances of their state in particular, even though that may not be entirely true. But, you know, I have yet to really see states be really active in loneliness and social isolation. A lot of this is being funded in, you know, philanthropy and other, I mean, honestly, philanthropy and other nonprofit models. So I don't know. Could there be a public-private partnership? Sure. You know, soon? Doubtful.
Yeah. Thanks, Julie. You know, I came up with my response not knowing what you guys were going to say. And I think we're 3-for-3 on this because I'm disappointed that issues affecting women and children were so far down on the list of public health priorities for consumers. You know, reproductive health, gun violence, maternal and infant care, childhood vaccines. And then I thought more about it. And I'm thinking maybe as a country, we are in sync with the new administration. And that's a very scary thought. So I appreciate all the positive ideas here. So, all right.
It's a great point, Berta.
Yeah. Any other scary thoughts from this week? Julie, what else happened that we should know about?
Well, I'm sure you guys have seen some of the blowback on the Super Bowl commercials from NYU Langone, Tampa General, MUSC. And when they're talking about these spots being $8 million a piece, and you have not-for-profit health systems buying those spots and then complaining about reimbursement, it just doesn't add up. And I've heard people complain about the Hims and Hers ad too, but I mean, I thought there was a lot of great like healthcare versus health going on in these ads, but God, the blowback is big.
Yeah. You have to go back in time and figure out who decided that. At what meeting did somebody think that was a good idea?
Yeah.
Pretty scary. Dave, what other news is worth mentioning?
Yeah. And what bubble are they living in? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, on the plus side, the stat readout this week had a report on the GLP-1 drugs and some of the new applications, and they're breathtaking. Hypertension and heart failure, brain health, pain management and neuropsychiatry, sleep apnea and substance abuse, Alzheimer and mental health disorders, including depression and bipolar disorder. Wow. if these drugs have the ability to improve brain chemistry in ways that retard this wide range of diseases, just imagine a future with a whole lot less chronic disease and debilitating effects that come from it. So that's really potentially very promising.
Yeah, a potential wonder drug. Thanks, Dave. And thanks, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to The Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Burda for Foresight Health.